Healthcare Today is produced and paid for by the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to wdev@radiovermont.com. Healthcare Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, a weekly exploration of health and wellness topics affecting Vermonters. Brought to you in part by Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. Northfieldpharmacy.com. And Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee owned and locally committed. Your participation is encouraged. Call with your questions, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Lewis Myers, and this is Healthcare Today. Today, we're going to be examining Vermont's healthcare system, and specifically the statewide all-payer plan, which is administered by the accountable care organization OneCare, which in turn is run by the University of Vermont Health System. We're not going to go too deeply into the weeds in this, but I thought it was important for listeners to understand something about this healthcare plan. It began officially 5 years ago, and its goal is to affect healthcare for every Vermonter. We want to look at how it's doing thus far and ask, what is it and is it working? With me today are two guests who have been looking at this closely in recent years, Mr. Patrick Flood and Mr. Bill Schubart. Let me introduce you to them both. Mr. Flood has a great deal of experience in Vermont administration. He was the director of the North County Health System in the North Country, in the Northeast Kingdom. Prior to that, he was the commissioner for Vermont Department of Mental Health. And prior to that, he was the deputy secretary for the Vermont Agency of Human Services. Mr. Bill Schubart is a businessman, a published author, and for a period of time was the chairman of the Board of Trustees for the University of Vermont Healthcare System. He is a Vermonter and has written a number of wonderful books, my favorite of which is Lila and Theron, which I highly recommend. And I want to welcome you both, gentlemen. I will add that I did reach out to the University of to OneCare and ask them if they would be on the show, and unfortunately they declined. But I'm glad to have you both here, and I think sharing your thoughts and opinions will be really helpful. This is a participatory show, and I would also like to welcome anyone who has a question or comment about the topic today to please give us a call at 802-244-1777. So welcome to you both.
Welcome. Happy to be here.
Mr. Flood, I'd like to start with you, and I wondered if you could just trace for us a little bit sort of the origin story of the all-payer plan. And in telling that, we might understand a little bit about more about what the plan actually is. I did note up a moment ago that I believe it's this week. It was officially signed, came into official life 5 years ago. So tell us about how it started.
Well, it's a complicated history, Lewis, actually, and I want to try to keep it basic so the average person can understand it. But by way of a summary, I would just like to say that the all-payer model and the ACO that was created with it really do not, in my opinion, make up health, real health reform. It's not helping the Vermonter, the average Vermonter, basically at all. It's costing tens of millions of dollars. It's not achieving its stated goals. It's been going on for 4 to 5 years, and we have really made no project.
All right. We're gonna talk about that. But how did it start, and why did it start?
Well, in my experience, I was running a federally qualified health center at the time, and we had our own. There were three ACOs back in those days. This was after Peter Shumlin had declared he wasn't going to pursue a single payer, that was too expensive, et cetera. And a lot of people were very disappointed in that. And I think my belief is that the hospital network went to Governor Shumlin and said, we have an alternative approach. We will go approach the federal government, and we will ask for a waiver. We'll create an ACO. We'll control costs, and we'll take risk. And I believe the Shumlin administration bought that idea. Then basically there's a period of time, which is really important, where the public was not included in any of this discussion. To me, it's really important that the development of the all-payer model and the ACO was done almost entirely behind closed doors. In 2016, there was a lot of discussion about taking the three ACOs that did exist and creating one. The other ACOs, one which was made up of federally qualified health centers, we were very skeptical of this approach. But in the end, the other ACOs couldn't survive and cover the costs. So we ended up with the one, which was associated with the UVM Medical Center.
So for those, if I could just pause for a minute, for those who, just to recap that, Governor Shumlin did, one of his big policy ideas was a single-payer plan. And in 2014, he backed away from that when some of the numbers suggested that economically it might not be feasible for Vermont. He then narrowly won re-election in 2014, and at that point seemed to pivot toward something called the all-payer plan. I wondered if you could just talk for a minute about what the all-payer plan is, and also people may not understand what an accountable care organization is.
Okay, I'll try to be brief and simple about it. The all-payer model in concept is that we would change the way Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance, commercial insurance, pays for health care. And as a theory, it's not a bad idea. If we financed and paid for those services differently, we could actually make it easier. We could save administrative costs. As a concept, it's not bad. But the way it's actually playing out is not gaining us anything in reality. Nothing is really changing, in spite of the fact we're spending tens of millions of dollars. The ACO is an accountable care organization, and by definition, what it is a voluntary choice by providers, being hospitals, doctors, and other providers, come together into one organization for the sake of trying to be more efficient and save money and improve care. Again, that's not a bad concept, but in reality, that's not what's actually going on. There really has been no improvement in quality. There's been no improvement in efficiency or lessening of costs.
Mr. Schubert, Patrick, I'm going to stop just for a minute. And Mr. Schubert, you've been involved with the University of Vermont healthcare system, and you've sort of watched this from the beginning. The all-payer plan is a fundamental change in the way we approach healthcare. Is it in and of itself a good idea?
I actually agree with Patrick. I think it is a good idea. Again, the issue for me is, and I have to say to your audience, although I was chair of the board at probably one of its most difficult times, when the former president was taken away to serve a jail term, my knowledge of healthcare is nowhere near as granular and experiential as Patrick's is, and I tend to see things more both at the ground level and at the 30,000-foot level. I think one of the most troubling things, which you just put some serious energy into trying to clarify, is the completely obfuscating nature of the healthcare lexicon and the acronyms, to the point where even the people in the legislature and to a much lesser extent the Green Mountain Care Board, for what it's worth, it's almost impenetrable. I mean, I could list five terms right now that a very smart person, maybe someone even in healthcare, would have no idea what they mean, and that they're a common part of the lexicon. I think the all-payer model is a good model. And frankly, the idea of moving from remediation, healthcare as a remediative service, as one highly placed person said to me, our business model is dependent on a steady stream of broken people coming in. We repair them to the best of our ability. We bill the insurance companies. We negotiate to get as much money as we can from them. And then that becomes our budget. And if you take that away, we're finished. If you, however, change the model and you move the investment upstream towards a capitated system where the accountable care organization is responsible upstream.
Can you explain that word capitated? I'm not sure people really understand what that means.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And again, that's another one of those words which I try to avoid. But in other words, you say, okay, you're caring for, you know, just make up a number, 400,000 people in Vermont and upstate New York. We're going to pay you per person, and it'll probably be based somewhat on your budget. And we're going to hold you accountable for the well-being of those people, not the number of remedial processes that you perform, you know, operations and, you know, so on and so forth. It's a different philosophy. And I'm a strong proponent of, in so many of these things, in education, healthcare, everywhere, move the investment upstream towards prevention.
So instead of being charging for every single procedure, every single lab test ordered, everything that, yep, that happens, let's say when you walk into an emergency department or get hospitalized or in your doctor's office, there would be a flat fee, and that fee would have already been paid to the providers, and then it's their job to take care of you based on that number.
Right, but there has to be an accountable metric that says, okay, you know, we're not counting your procedures anymore, but we are looking at these agreed-upon measures of population health.
And this is something that this is not just for Vermont. There are a number of states around the country that worked with the federal government under what's called Medicare payment reform initiatives. So we are not the only state that is attempted this, correct? I believe Maryland and Massachusetts have made some efforts and other states.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about the other states? Do we have a sense of how they're doing?
I don't. Patrick, you know.
I don't really either. I've been so focused on what's going on in Vermont, I haven't paid a lot of attention to the other states. But I would like to say, Lewis, that along the lines of what Bill was just saying, you know, it is possible to have a capitated system. When I was with the Northern Counties Healthcare at the F2AC, we actually asked the government, the state, if we couldn't have at least a global budget for Medicaid. And because having a global budget would free us up to be more flexible and not to be stuck with all the coding and all the billing and things that cost a ton of money. Everybody could do a better job if we operated out of a fair, reasonable global budget. So I don't object to the idea of different financing at all. That's just not what we're getting right now. Right now, in spite of working on this for 5 years, only 2% of all the money, all healthcare dollars in Vermont are actually alternative payment or capitated. Only 2% after 5 years. It's crazy. We're not accomplishing what we need to accomplish.
So,
and the other thing that's really, I think, intriguing about what Patrick's saying is the numbers that are being filed and put out there, there's a significant difference between a lot of where the raw data brings us and what is being put out there to kind of support the idea that this is successful. I mean, I have to say, when I started writing about this, I got several whistleblower emails that were, I found profoundly troubling. Both around the NORC, a consulting firm, I think it was in Minneapolis, was hired to sort of, my sense is, to prove how effective it is. And they did, and the way they did it was highly questionable.
Bill, can I stop you for a minute? Let's step back for a minute, and let's go back to 2016. So Governor Shumlin and his administration have been working on this. They've been talking with the federal government about changing the healthcare system here and trying this initiative. The Green Mountain Care Board, led by Mr. Al Gobay, is involved at that point. Talk us through a little bit about how the final arrangements were made. And also, I guess one question is, to what extent was our legislature, who are the folks we actually vote for, to what extent were they involved in sort of as this plan was created?
Could I jump in there, Lewis,
and
tell you? My understanding, I was still engaged. I was still engaged with the system at that time. And there's a couple of really important points, I think. As I mentioned earlier, really this initiative was dreamed up without really any public input whatsoever, public discussion. And we were told at the time that you can't, they couldn't tell us what was going on because they were negotiating with the federal government, and the federal government did not want to negotiate in public. To a large extent, that's true. When the federal government is engaged in these kind of negotiations, they don't want to do it in public. But here's what was missing. They could have talked with Vermonters about what change should happen, what the system or the reform should look like. And that never really happened before the deal was made with the federal government. And in terms of the legislature, as far as I can tell, the legislature largely abdicated their responsibility in this whole thing and let the administration basically cook this up and implement it with very little legislative oversight. So, and the Green Mountain Care Board, as far as I can tell, which also signed on to this whole agreement, basically provided little or no oversight to it. So it was planned without public input, and a lot of it was ill considered, and that's, in my opinion, largely why it's been a failure.
It doesn't really seem the Vermont way, which is, I know in Vermont we have active discussion about a number of other policy areas, such in particular in education and refugees and almost any other issue you can think, it's almost talked to death. But in this case, the public, it sounds like, didn't know that much about what was coming down the pike here.
I think that's very true.
And
when the Green Mountain Care Board started up, I was on the advisory board, and there were 50 of us. And then there was the Green Mountain Care Board, and this was back at the very beginning. And, people like Con Hogan and Betty Ramber, I mean, there were people who really believed in and had a vision for health care in Vermont, and they were prepared to do the work. And somehow, over the course of a couple of years, it got politicized. And then when Kevin Mullen was appointed, with, to my knowledge, little or no background in healthcare, I mean, he had some involvement, I think, with the Rutland Hospital, but that was it. It clearly became politicized. And I have to tell you, at that point, of the 50 members on the advisory board, who were not part of anything. We were not in their meetings most often. We were occasionally asked what we thought about something. But virtually everyone on the advisory board, except about 16 or 17 of the 50, who had a specific agenda that they were trying to preserve, we all just quit. It wasn't worth driving there. And the whole migration of the Green Mountain Care Board to having some responsibility for vision and creating metrics and making, healthcare more accessible and affordable to Vermonters, in my view, has just deteriorated to a sort of not very well managed financial regulatory agency that's trying to keep all 14 hospitals alive.
Now, Patrick had mentioned a few minutes ago several goals for the all-payer plan. One, of course, is to control costs. Another is to focus more on preventative care rather than sort of acute care. Obviously, yes, both are needed, but that's another goal. And the third is to sort of integrate the system, bringing in hospitals, nursing homes, and other healthcare facilities to sort of under one umbrella, which in a small state like ours would seem to be more feasible, for example, than in a very large state. But let's talk about each of those goals. First of all, let's start with the integration. Has it been able to effectively bring in different hospitals, medical providers, community health centers, nursing centers, et cetera?
Well, let me just say this, that on paper, the ACO has a lot of those members. It includes all the hospitals. It includes several of the F3Cs, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, there's been no improvement in integration or no improvement in coordination as far as I can tell. I see no signs of it anywhere. So to me, the ACO is integrating only on paper. And furthermore, and I say this without being able to, show the proof, but there are many parties to the ACO who have joined it because they felt they didn't have any choice. And some who are so afraid that if they didn't join it, their funding would be affected. And now what I hear talking to some of these people is they're afraid to even criticize it because of retribution. So when it comes to integration, it's not at all what people might imagine or hope for.
It sounds like it's not exactly a coalition of the willing, more a coalition of the people who are oppressed. We have a Dave from Montpelier who would like to add a comment. Dave.
Gentlemen, Dave Bellini from Montpelier. I think you guys nailed it. I'll just throw a few of my own spears, if I may. You're right. They're just not doing anything. They're getting paid, and it's like a jobs program for people that are keeping this fantasy going. I see a pattern. I mean, EB-5 was going to do all these good things. They obfuscated, hit the ball, and who knows if crimes were committed, but it was a massive failure. Single payer was going to be the way, and sure, it was very confusing, and nobody could figure out the math, and of course, that never happened. Vermont sets these carbon goals. Oh, we're going to do great things in, 20 or 30 years, and they don't happen. Then we got the Green Mountain Care Board, where they're going to change the world too, and nobody can quite figure out what exactly they're supposed to do, and it doesn't happen. And then it's One Care, and boy, the ACO, they're going to do it, and they know what to do. And it reminds me a lot of when Ken Lay was running Enron. No one could understand the math, but they just kept saying how great they were. They were going to do great things. And people said, doesn't really add up. That's sort of where I'm at. And now we're on to the wait times for UVM. And as a consumer of healthcare, I can tell you that they're not very good. And as an average person that uses the hospital and doctors, so I haven't seen anything except
I'm sorry, Lewis, I'm not hearing
things
any
have gotten
of
more difficult since UVM took over basically the whole medical world. And I would like to see the legislature undo it. It's 5 years or more. You failed. They failed. They're massive, colossal failure. They're never going to do anything.
And Dave, I appreciate you calling in. I think that you've made some, brought some historical perspective. We've seen both in Vermont and nationally certain initiatives sort of crash and burn behind, with the public not knowing enough until the very end. We're going to be, after the break, we're going to be talking more about what the all-payer plan would like to do and is it working. We've just talked about whether or not it is sort of coordinating care in an effective way, and it sounds like that is a challenge, as it would be in almost any system, bringing together so many disparate kinds of healthcare facilities. It's not an easy task. The question is whether or not they have approached it in the right way. I guess one question I would have, and we can talk about this afterwards, is if there's some distrust of the University of Vermont among other parts of the state, if this had been a completely independent organization, the ACO, working on this plan, if perhaps that might have engendered a little bit more trust and perhaps a little bit more success. I mean, the story isn't written yet, so I don't want to write off the all-payer plan at this point. We talked about coordination of care. There's also part of the agreement with the federal government was to that the all-payer plan, the ACO, would have to sign up a certain number of people. That's one of the metrics that Mr. Flood mentioned, certain number of people within the first 5 years if they were going to get a five-year renewal, which actually is coming up. Mr. Flood, what do we know about that? Where are they in terms of how many people are under this plan at this point?
Well, they should be up around 60% of Vermonters should be in the ACO, and it's really about 36%. So they're way behind, and in fact, the federal government has cited them in writing for failing to meet the targets. But, you know, the reason they felt they have not met the targets, in my opinion, is because they're really not offering anything that people are interested in. Most people will tell you they have no idea what the ACO is. They know nothing about it. And in reality, it's done nothing, honestly, for most Vermonters. So why should they join? So I think that they have completely failed to achieve that goal because they're not really doing anything that makes a difference for people.
Well, let's talk about those differences. Two important differences I think the individual Vermonter would be concerned about is, number one, personal cost of health care to them, and number two, the quality of health care they're receiving. And those are also certain metrics. Let's talk about the cost. Has health care gotten... Have we been able to bend the cost curve of health care in Vermont in the past 5 years since this plan started?
Absolutely not. Insurance rates continue to go up at 6 and 7% rates. The most recent approval of hospital budgets are all in the 5, 6, and 7% range, including the UVM Medical Center. They were supposed to be down around 3.5%. That was the agreement. We're nowhere near that. So we're grossly failing to bring down costs. It's just a failure. I don't know why we're keeping at it.
Why hasn't OneCare been more successful, do you think, in controlling the costs?
Well, in my humble opinion, because honestly, in spite of whatever efforts, they really don't know what they're doing. We're trying to create a whole new bureaucracy from whole cloth. And it takes years and years to build that kind of an organization that can actually coordinate all the care for, you know, all those providers, that can actually come up with new ways to manage care, that can educate consumers. This takes a long time. And I just don't think OneCare has the they have plenty of money, but they don't have the experience or the knowledge to make this work.
You know, you make a point about the length of time it takes to change, and I think you're correct. Now, OneCare will say and have said that in applying for extensions that 5 years is not long enough to change an entire system, that it might take 10, it might take 15 years. What are Mr. Schubert, what do you think about that?
Well, we can sort of hypothecate how long it's going to take. To me, the most troubling piece of this is where it all begins. Does it begin with asking the question about Vermonters' health care cost and access? Bearing in mind that Vermont has a mix of different demographics, different geography, does it begin there, or does it begin with the giant institutions? So if the whole discussion is among large institutions, then the interests of the design of a new system are going to focus on the needs and interests of the institutions. If it's focused on Vermonters, then you look at the whole panoply of healthcare services providers, from a sole practitioner in a town of 250 people to a federally qualified, you know, health center, like the one in Plainfield or the one that, that Patrick was head of up north. You look at critical access hospitals, you look at tertiary care hospitals, and you say, okay, given who Vermonters are and what they need, what is the ideal deployment of those institutions? You don't say what's in the best interest of the largest institution and how can they expand their reach and their coverage. It's just a completely flawed starting point. And that's, I think, what haunts me. I mean, I grew up in Morrisville. We had three doctors. We had the Copley Hospital. It was a very affordable, and whether you had money or not, you got taken care of. And, you know, that model has just radically changed. And again, it's where's the starting point? Is it the patient, as the signs all over the hospital in Burlington say, or is it the institution?
Well, and I think that's a very profound question. It's one that I brought up before the break, which is if it had been a different organization independent of the University of Vermont, sort of trying to manage this all-payer plan, if the outcomes might have been and the acceptance might have been a bit different. Let's talk about something else that's very important to people is how good is the care they're getting? And again, there are metrics that the federal government looks at when they look at a program like the all-payer plan. It's supposed to meet certain important metrics. Patrick, do you want to talk a little bit about those metrics and whether or not they are, at this point, they're meeting them?
Yeah, sure. The let's just talk about the metrics of actual care. So for example, in some cases, the actual metrics of the care have gotten worse, not better. You know, the incidence of high blood pressure, for example, and the incidence of high blood pressure is a really important measure of your healthcare system, how well you're doing, attacking chronic illness. It has not gotten any better. In fact, in some cases, in some years, it's actually gotten worse. The outcome has deteriorated. There is really no evidence that this model and One Care's efforts have done anything to improve care of for Vermonters. It just, the evidence is just not there, in spite of all the money we're spending.
The one thing that I would add to what Patrick is saying, which I think is really interesting to me, you know, from a tort standpoint, if you can't access the hospital, I mean, I have two people that I know quite well who presented, you know, to their primary care person with low back pain. And they had, you know, a couple of months before they could get a primary care visit. They got that. The primary care physician said, well, we got to look a little more. They might have been sent off to the pain clinic, which is another couple of months. Or the orthopedic, which is a couple of more months. And then they end up with a urologist. The urologist, you know, and again, each one of these things is anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks or 10 weeks out. Then they get to the urologist. The urologist says, well, you know, I don't like what I'm seeing with your prostate. Let's do a PSA. They do a PSA. Whoa, that's not good. We need to do a biopsy, but
I think a number of people may have know that general scenario. And in fact, there has been a focus recently on access. As we know, 7 Days ran a cover story several weeks ago about sort of long wait times. Let me ask though: is it fair? Let me just ask this question: is it fair to put the onus on the ACO about access at this point, given some of the challenges we have in Vermont at attracting both primary care and specialists?
That's a very fair question, and frankly, it's a universal problem across healthcare in most of the country. And I understand that. And you know, the metric is how many traveling nurses at $205 an hour, you know, does the institution employ or try to bid for? But just to finish that one thought, Lewis, is then the biopsy comes back and the person has you know, metastatic prostate cancer. Now, how does the delayed diagnosis tie to the end diagnosis? And what then becomes the liability? If that person had actually got diagnosed within the first few weeks of presenting, would there be less of a liability from an institutional standpoint? That's happening more and more. And that, I would think, would be a huge concern. And it's not all about the number of primary care docs or access. Some of it really, at least from what I'm being told by insiders, is scheduling.
Right. There is some...
Lewis,
go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I just wanted to attempt to address the question you asked about, is it fair to blame the ACO for some of these failures? And I actually think it is. Keep in mind, for the past 5 years, the all-payer model and the ACO have completely taken over and driven healthcare reform efforts in Vermont. So for the past 5 years, whatever's happened or not happened, whatever credit there is or blame, goes to those folks. Now, just take primary care as an example. It's a goal to improve primary care of the ACO and the APM. But, in fact, primary care continues to deteriorate. More and more doctors are leaving. Fewer and fewer doctors are joining. The ACO actually cut payments to the primary care doctors. It's just being totally mismanaged, and it contributes, and it also includes things like the nurses and other providers. That is not where the focus is being put. And as a result, those parties, doctors, nurses, we're gonna have a real problem. We already have a real problem. It's only gonna get worse as long as we stick to this model.
Let me turn to Mr. Schubert. Mr. Schubert, you wrote a very thoughtful, lengthy commentary in VT Digger recently, and one of the issues you looked at had to do with sort of the ethics and fiscal integrity, I think is the words you used, of what's happening at the University of Vermont Medical Center in connection with the ACO. And I'm just going to quote, I think it's a direct quote, your commentary. You said the UVM Medical Center Governing Board, which is responsible for ethical and fiscal integrity and reviewing its performance and fiscal interests, is laden with highly compensated employees of both the medical center and its network. In other words, the same people that are supposed to be reviewing the ethics and fiscal integrity are actually employees of that institution. What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting because I actually, after that came out, I had a very good discussion with Dr. Brumstead and the chair of the board, and
Dr. Brumstead is, of course, the CEO of the both yes. OneCare and the University yes. of Vermont Medical System.
And there was some pushback on that, but the question is, you know, the term highly compensated, because highly compensated inside the system, you know, means one thing. And I did get some feedback that, you know, well, so-and-so is not really highly compensated. I mean, they teach as part of the three-legged stool, and they get a stipend for that. But highly compensated to a Vermonter is very different from highly compensated to somebody inside the system. Highly compensated inside the system is $500,000 to $1.2 million. Highly compensated to a Vermonter may be anything above $80,000. So my concern is, my focus and knowledge is around governance. I've chaired about a dozen boards in Vermont. And you simply either don't have any or you minimize the number of compensated employees on your board. That was one ethical concern. The other ethical concern is the number of people who are on multiple boards. I mean, Dr. Brumstead is president and CEO of the UVM Health Network, former CEO and current board member of UVM Medical Center, and chair of the OneCare board.
He's a busy fellow.
Pardon?
He's a busy fellow.
He's a busy fellow. I get that. And I have great respect for him. He's a terrific doctor. That's not the issue. The issue is governance, and I don't understand why the boards are not paying real attention to this. And one of the issues I've raised with them in the past, too, is one of the responsibilities of a board is to have a compensation philosophy. And when you're being threatened with a nurses strike and you can't find nurses and you've got middle managers in the 5 to 800,000 range and leadership in the, you know, 1.5 to 2.2 million range, maybe you need to reexamine the compensation philosophy.
Yeah. There also seems to be a churning, and I think this is true for a number of different areas in Vermont and public policy. We're a small state. There are not that many quote-unquote good jobs at the top. But I know it's been of some concern. For example, Mr. Algobay, who was the chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board and helped negotiate the One Care plan with the government, then became the Secretary of Human Services, where he was basically administering it. And then 2 months after leaving that position, he ended up as getting hired at a, you know, ginormous salary at the University of Vermont Medical Center to be their vice president. So there's, I don't know how we deal with a situation like that, but it's certainly of concern.
But my concern is, you know, it's funny because when a college goes down, everybody goes, oh, it was the college president's fault. No, actually, it wasn't. It was the governing board's fault. The president of an institution serves at the will of the governing board. So if anything goes drastically wrong, you know, as this moves forward, one has to look at the governing board. And I find that, you know, that to me is one of the most troubling parts of this.
Well, there's a number of areas that are troubling. There are other options out there, and, you know, it may be water under the bridge now, but other states have approached health care reform in different ways. Nevada, Colorado, and the state of Washington all have gone with a sort of a modified public option in which the state and federal funding goes toward a federally funded plan which controls costs by lowering payments predominantly to hospitals and providers, usually targeting it to Medicare payments, and in return offers much lower premiums for their state residents who choose that plan. Is that something that Vermont could have considered or perhaps in the future could consider?
Boy, let me just contribute to that. Absolutely, Lewis. I think you've hit the nail on the head. You know, what we should – I'm going to just say quickly – that what we should be doing instead of what we are doing, and what we should be doing are the basics. We should be improving and strengthening primary care so every Vermonter has a doctor when and where they need it. We should be improving mental health because, believe it, no, people don't even talk about it, but mental health problems cause or exacerbate a lot of health problems. We should be working on prevention by addressing what we call the social determinants of health. People should not be homeless. They should not be hungry. We need to address poverty, those kinds of things. And if we could create, I believe, in this state, it wouldn't be a huge leap to come up with a public option if we could get the federal government to agree to let us do it to expand Medicaid, because so many people are covered. It wouldn't be a big leap. And we could have universal coverage and universal service without it really wouldn't be that difficult to pull off, in my opinion. We're just headed down the wrong path.
Let's remember that a public option is different than single payer. Single payer basically means that you have no choice, that you have – there's only one payer in the state, and that's usually the government, and that you have to be in that healthcare system if you're a Vermont resident. Public option, by definition, is an option. It gives you the choice if you choose to go with that plan. But it doesn't rule out the commercial plans. And I think that, in some ways, it might have been a simpler approach. I think the other issue, frankly, for One Care is, and Patrick, you brought it up, there are so many determinants of health, and many of them, you know, are social determinants, including homelessness, including, difficulty with access. I think One Care has attempted to address all of those. The question is it too large, too much to take on? Does it create an institution that's too big to fail? And are the goals simply too overwhelming for any one institution to address?
Well, that's my commentary in Digger this morning, is that, you know, if the moral determinants of healthcare, you know, are the purview of government, then where's our legislature? Where's our governor? Because I agree, it's not all on the healthcare system. I don't want the healthcare system working on affordable housing, or I want them working on things related to the individual Vermonter.
Yeah, I have to tell you, in residency, I didn't get a lot of training in affordable housing, although it's certainly important. You bring up one question. I did want to ask this, and that you bring up the governor. We've talked about the legislature seems to be missing in action to some degree. Governor Scott has been first, out front with the COVID pandemic, obviously, and has done a terrific job. I have not heard him speak very often on the One Care. I'm not even sure where he stands on it. Do either of you know?
No.
No idea.
I think it's remarkable how little we have heard from the administration about the all-payer model and the ACO. There's a silence that makes no sense to me. But no, we don't hear about it. And I suspect that's because they realize it's a failure and they really don't want to go there.
Well, go ahead, Bill. You want to sum up, Bill, your thoughts before we close?
I really have said most of what I have to say. I, as someone who's lived here since 1947 and mostly in small towns, I know healthcare can work. I know it can. But if it isn't focused on the well-being of Vermonters, if it's focused on the well-being of the providing institutions and also the payers, this is an area we didn't get into, but I went ballistic on this when I met with them. The idea of breaking that wall and creating your own payer, you know, with the UVM Medical Advantage MVP plan, that has to be watched like a hawk. Because what happens when the hospital says, okay, in order to survive, you're going to need chemotherapy, that's $14,000 a month, and your payer that you wholly own says, oh, well, we're not covering that.
Bill, I'm going to have to stop because I think that is an important topic. There are so many things that we've covered. I'd like to come back to this in 6 months and see where we are. We have to hope for the best, but I want Vermonters to be aware of it. I want them to be involved. And I want you to be kind to yourselves and others and to please join us next week. Thank you to Bill Schubert and to Patrick Flood.
Thank you. My friend.
Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, brought to you in part by Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee owned and locally committed. Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. NorthfieldPharmacy.com.
The music for this program was written and produced by Armin Bayajian.